What can you say about tonight's movie? Except that it's real 80s. Journey on the soundtrack, obvious 20-somethings playing teenagers, Matthew Modine, high school angst, a sports-driven objective, young love, cultural appropriation, heady concepts shoehorned into a low-stakes narrative, and the story of a young wrestler trying to lose weight so he can win the middleweight division title. Y'all Gen Xers know what I'm talking about. Vision Quest.
Welcome to The Hold Up. Each month, we pick a movie one of us remembers fondly but hasn't seen in years. We watch it, and we decide. Does it hold up? I'm John Longinot.
And I'm John Nelson.
And happy summer!
Yay!
Welcome to July.
That's right. We do these episodes so out of order nowadays, I can't keep up with where we are.
Well, neither can weather itself, so it all works out. Is it winter? Is it summertime? Is it the fall? Who knows?
Yeah.
It's either hailing or it's hot as shit.
Yep. Climate change is real, folks.
Welcome back to The Hold Up. John, how you doing?
Oh, I'm great. How are you, John Longinot?
I'm fantastic. I'm looking forward to going on some kind of vision quest.
Some sort of.
One I am not familiar with. I don't really know what we're into. But before we get into that, I should drop some knowledge on our listeners. First of all, you can reach us for emails at holduppodcast@gmail.com. Where we have received a plethora of emails.
I know. We've hit a chord, finally.
Yes, it turns out that people have some thoughts on Gone with the Wind, which was our two episodes ago we listened to, Gone with the Wind.
Well, again, when you start doing episodes out of order, things sort of take a weird turn.
Well, what John's alluding to, like full disclosure here, we actually recorded our Buffy episode prior to the recording of our Gone with the Wind episode, so we kind of had that one due to scheduling in the tank for a few months. So that's why last month we didn't have these emails, but we are happy to get to them now. Our first email comes from one Glenn Morgan.
So Glenn writes us and he says, I really enjoyed the Gone with the Wind podcast. Unlike John's mom, I was never a fan of the movie, nor was anyone in my family that I'm aware of. But it does raise the question of how much of history and culture gets erased, / negated, / forgotten in retrospect based on modern attitudes. I don't know the answer. I hope Keaton's The General doesn't get blacklisted because his character was on the side of the South. Otherwise, not a whole lot of Civil War taking of sides in that film that I remember, but someone else might see it differently. There's definitely a generational component as well, obviously between John and his mom, but also in a more general sense. I certainly have a different attitude about Confederate statues and other outright celebrations of the quote-unquote cause, but my feelings are more mixed about art, music, etc. that is connected in a more tenuous way. There's definitely a slippery slope there. Here's an interesting thought that occurred to me. I wonder if Southerners weren't essentially bamboozled by their, quote, 1%, the same way today's middle American Republicans are. Because really, how many people actually own slaves? Only the richest, I think. Certainly not the ancestors of a lot of today's most strident rebel flag wavers. I know one thing that happened in the South after the war was that the poor whites were suddenly at the bottom rung of the ladder, and a lot of them have been pissed off about that ever since. Anyway, an interesting discussion to have in the future. Glenn.
Yes, and Glenn is actually from Tennessee, where I'm from. And Glenn knew both my mother and the person who sent us another email.
Ooh.
One Linda Barber, who was a friend of my mom's as well. So it's actually really interesting. I talked about my mom a fair amount in the Gone with the Wind episode. So I think it's really interesting to get the perspective of her friends who are a generation prior to me. So Linda writes us, and she says, I loved your episode. Y'all are really good. Also, the entire economy of the U.S. now and then was on the backs of slavery. The North profited as much or more. That's a real fact. That is part of the discussion of reparations. The U.S. would not be the country it is without the absolutely horrific history of slavery. I think they deserve reparations. Here is why my mother loved it. She was a poor sharecropper in a shack with no running water and outhouses, Grapes of Wrath stuff. A lot of Southerners, and you mentioned this, were impoverished after the Civil War, and really it still is today compared to the rest of the country. So you are right that a lot of the South worshipped Gone with the Wind because of what you said about Southern guilt wrapped up in their impoverished situations. And I must say that every person from the North I've ever met looks down on people from the South. The South had nothing to be proud of after the Civil War. My mother's love of the movie was about getting out of poverty and a love story, and mother loved Scarlett's determination to rise above her poverty. And she was a very different female lead in that she was bad, yes, but she wasn't your typical little woman. My mother was terribly independent and strong, which gave my mother hope, and I think you guys seem to get that in your discussion. We all really didn't like Melanie. Just too fucking good. As to Miriam, my mother, she grew up in Atlanta and was immersed in the whole thing, but she knew about the racism in it. But your mom and I had a pretty twisted sense of humor. Ashley is a wimp. I think all women think that. We did. Plus, he's not that handsome, but a lot of women at the time thought he was a heartthrob. Sincerely, Linda. Awesome. That's really interesting to read. I think Linda picks up on a lot of the points of the politics of the South, and it's a very complicated right. situation and stuff. And I, one thing she really kind of hit on that I think is important is the idea of Gone with the Wind being liked by impoverished people as a story of lifting yourself out of poverty.
Right. That it would make sense that that's what they respond to, because that's the, you know, the thrust of the movie, or at least that's the story, quote unquote, of the movie, not the actual romance, which is, I'm sure, what everybody was secretly supposed to respond to. Sure. Or whatnot.
Glenn also raises a really interesting point in that it is similar to the 1% today, where yes, he is right. It's not like every white Southerner in existence owned a slave.
Right.
That was something for the wealthy class that owned slaves. And a lot of them were sharecroppers that were basically financially indentured to these wealthy people anyway.
Yeah, which is interesting when you consider, because if it's like, well, if it's the 1% who are, you know, doing this terrible thing, and, you know, everybody else has sort of plausible deniability, then why not just, you know, wholesale reject it and say, yes, we like the stuff that didn't involve the slavery. Why, you know, tie yourself down to this thing like, yeah, but ...
Yeah.
You know,
it's almost as if racism is a tool to fool idiots into not rebelling against the people that are actually taking their money.
Whatever, libtar, let's move on.
Episode 49, Vision Quest.
Oh, man.
Mr. Nelson, what the fuck is Vision Quest? I've never heard of this movie. Not even an inkling. I literally know absolutely nothing about it.
Well, given what I just brought to you and in the introduction, what do you think, John Legend?
Sounds like it's about a wrestler not eating to make weight for a title or something.
Sure, right, that's the plot. But what, okay, you know, what's going on in Vision Quest? I mean, that is the plot, but you can try and guess what else
okay.
is going on.
All yes, right. Certainly. Before we get into full discussion of Vision Quest and what it is, as I know literally nothing about the movie other than your introduction, I will make a guess as to what Vision Quest is about, because that's what we do here on the show. Blind guesses that are totally wrong.
Well, and remembering things that are totally wrong. Don't
yes,
forget that part.
Certainly. So, okay. So Vision Quest is an 80s movie, and from my understanding, based on your description, it's a guy who's a wrestler in I assume high school, trying to win a title.
Right.
So I'm going to guess it's in the vein of, you know, your format that Rocky laid out in the 70s and that every sports wrestling fighting movie has done since then, which is like, I'm not good enough and I need to train, and there's a dick that's a bad guy. And oh man, and maybe there's some lady drama of like, I'm stealing his girlfriend, or he stole my girlfriend, or we like the same girl, or something like that is probably what's going on. So I'm going to guess he's like in high school, he's trying to win a title, there's some lady drama, there's some antagonist at the high school
right.
that he dislikes for some reason, either bullying him or is a bully to other kids or whatever. And then as these things kind of go, he loses a match or isn't doing well. And then someone has the cockamamie scheme of like, you need to make welterweight or something, and you need to go down to a mid-carder weight. So now you're not going to eat, and we're going to get you this midweight because you want to beat this guy that's the midweight champion because you have a vendetta against him or some kind of beef with him. So that's your motivation, why on earth you would try to get to this weight class. And I'm guessing the guy helping him is some fucking Mr. Miyagi dude, like a janitor or a gardener or something along those lines that works at the school. He's training him at night when the staff's not around, and he's getting ready for the big thing. And then it all culminates in the wrestling match where he wins and he becomes champion. He gets the girl and saves the day. I'm guessing the Vision Quest is like he smokes peyote or something to like, there's some spiritual metaphorical vision quest, which is his quest for this title, and some of the help he's getting along the way is along these lines. Maybe it's a Native American janitor who's right. helping him out.
You would think, right?
That would kind of make that make sense.
That would make sense.
I don't
sense.
Know. I don't even know who's in it. I know none of the stars or anything. That's right. That's Vision Quest.
Well, okay. Not bad. Okay. Some of that's true.
All right.
From my memory, Matthew Modine is the high school wrestler. He is now, the reason he is going down to middleweight is because he has already beaten, he's already won the heavyweight wrestling champion title. He is Alexander. He has looked down upon this kingdom and there are no more worlds to conquer. And apparently the best dude who is the best wrestler in all of the Tri-County or wherever the hell they're from is the wrestler in the middleweight. I don't know how that works.
Okay, so his motivation is just the sport.
His motivation is purely just, I want to prove I can do it. And mostly the movie is just him not eating and just like, I got to prove this to myself. And it's really weird because Matthew Modine, being Matthew Modine, he's kind of cocky about it. It's just like, I'll just go down to middleweight and I'll take on this dude. But there's something so, like, it's weird because the plot that you described is not terribly far from the plot of the movie, but the movie is dead fucking serious. It's serious about his goals. It's serious about how serious he takes it. It's kind of goofy, and yet the movie is serious enough, take itself seriously enough. I don't know. It's hard to describe.
It sounds to me, let me know if this is the tone, kind of Top Gun-ish.
Kind of
where it's like, I'm the fucking shit, I'm the hot shot, I'm great, I'm at my apex, everything's great,
right?
Oh, here's some mild challenge that
right
maybe knocks me down half a peg, but
yes.
I'm still the best. And then by the end of the movie it's like, yep, I'm the best,
still the best. I think the peg that knocks him down is the girl that you're talking about. Okay. Now this is where I'm a little fuzzy on it. Linda Fiorentino is the girl.
Oh really? Okay.
And I believe she is in this movie an older woman. I don't know how much older.
Okay.
I don't even know if she is an older
woman.
She's
just in The Last Seduction basically while Vision Quest is going on.
While Vision Quest is happening. But he falls in love with this woman who is sort of out of his league, and he sort of comes to this, crossroads.
Wait, is she like a teacher or something? He's in high school, right?
Yeah, he's in high school, and I don't remember anything about who she is.
Okay.
But she is his kind of like, she's the temptation. It's like he's supposed to not be eating, he's supposed to be working out, and yet he really likes this girl, and he's letting her to kind of distract him, and is he going to get, is he going to keep steady? Is he going to, get the weight down so he can compete? And the whole thing basically hinges on, like, he's got to lose, like, X number of pounds. He's got to get down to this weight. And he's having trouble. Like, he's not eating. He's, like, spitting all the time to, like, just get rid of, like, whatever weight he can. It's really fun. I mean, it's funny because it's, like, on the one hand, it's silly, but it's also, like, he's taking it dead serious. And, again, there's, like, all this, like, power metal going on in the back, Journey and all sure. these other like songs. And the best part to me, the thing that encapsulates the spirit of this movie is his opponent. I don't think you learn too much about him. It's not like he's a bully. It's not like they have a real thing going on. It's just, this is the enemy and I'm going to beat him for some reason. But the dude is just like this little Napoleon, like muscle man. And one of the ways you meet him, I'm not entirely sure if this is his first scene, but one of the ways you meet him is he's walking up and down the stands of, like, the football stands in the high school. He's carrying a fucking giant log on his back.
Okay.
Like, he's the strongest human being. And he's got, like, the evil sneer. Like, he turns slowly around to face the camera with a big sweaty sneer on his face. That kind of a movie. And of course, in there somewhere is, I don't know if there's a mentor. I forget if there is a Native American indigenous mentor who is teaching him about the quest, but I do believe there is somebody in there who is telling him about, well, in times like these, the peoples used to go on what they call a vision quest. And I think it's more metaphorical than literal, but yeah.
Does he have a dream where he talks to a coyote or something?
I can't remember that. I don't think so, but I'm not gonna say no because the funny thing is like this movie came out in the 80s. I did, and I saw trailers and things about it, but I never saw the movie when I was like in high school. But it just was one of those movies that sort of like, I don't even know how to describe it. It was one of those where I was like, well, I should watch that at some point. It seems kind of dangerous or something. I don't know. You just get that feeling about these movies where you're like, something about that movie scares me or whatever. And then you watch it later on, you're like, well, it's not as goofy as I feared it would be. There's something to it, though. I mean,
so it sort of piqued your interest, not enough to watch it at the time, but was in the sort of subconsciously in your mind, like, I should see that.
I should see this.
So when did you finally watch it?
I think I finally watched it in my 20s, my late 20s. Okay. I finally sat down with my wife, I think, or maybe she was just, maybe we were just dating at the time, but we sat down and watched it. And I remember being like, you know, as the movie started up and, you know, a dude's carrying around a log on his back, I was like, this is ridiculous. And I'm laughing. But by the end of the movie, I was invested in it.
Okay.
So it's got, I don't know, that it's a weird tonal balance. Like, it shouldn't work, yet I remember it working. But again, that was, right, you know, decades ago.
So I sort of have a feel for it, but let me ask you this, and maybe the answer is you don't know, but on the scale of, like, in on its own bullshit to unironically completely sincere,
uh-huh,
is it like the movie is totally sincere but it's funny but still kind of good, or does the movie kind of know how silly it is and that's the deal?
I don't think the movie acknowledges how silly it is. I think the movie takes itself, like, if the movie knows it's silly, it doesn't tip its hat about it.
Sure.
Because there's funny stuff in it. I think there is, like, genuine, like, organic funniness in it, but it's not, like, at the expense of the characters or the story or anything like that. It's just, you know, stuff that happens in the moment. So it is, I mean, Top Gun is actually not a bad comparison, because it is like those movies where it's like just overjacked, over testosterone, sure, just like super male, super, like, you know, a guy's got to do what a guy's got to do, and then he's undone by a woman. And the question is then, like, well, is that the worst thing? I mean, you like her, right? Well, is wrestling the most important fucking thing in your life, or are you wanting to, you know, get laid on the regular, dude?
Nelson, here's the bad news.
Okay.
I fucking hate Top Gun.
Well,
like, I hate Top Gun. People love that movie.
Yeah.
Unironically just love that movie.
I know.
I hate Top Gun. So if it's like that, I'm a little worried.
Well, I don't want to say people who love Top Gun unironically are incorrect, but I think there's a way to watch Top Gun where you can enjoy yourself.
There's a 10-minute segment of the gayest volleyball I've ever seen in my life, which is magical. Like, it's not like Top Gun doesn't have its fine wine moments. And yes, ironically is the way to watch Top Gun. So I don't actually so much dislike the movie. It's more the people that sincerely think it's actually good.
Right. Well,
which it's not.
Not exactly. I think there's something to Top Gun, though. I mean, again, the movie never tips its hat. Top Gun never tips its hat. But when stuff like Val Kilmer saying, "Sorry about Goose, we all liked him." I mean, that's the stupidest thing you can say to somebody. Right. And that to them is just like a huge fucking, like, oh my God, he sacrificed his masculinity to give a helping hand.
Although,
to a dude.
You know what? I'm serious saying I hate it. It's been decades since I've seen Top Gun. Perhaps young John wasn't watching it with the right frame of mind. We had a similar situation with Face Off. I don't know if you recall this.
Yes.
Where I'm like, people love this movie and it's fucking stupid. And then I watch it older and I'm like, oh, this movie's hilarious. Who cares if people sincerely like it or not? I can enjoy it for how fun and dumb it is.
Right.
So maybe I need to, like, chill out about Top Gun and actually just watch it again. It was infused in me in junior high when this really annoying kid in my class would, like, wear fucking flight jackets and, like, loved Top Gun. And I was always just like, do you realize how fucking stupid that movie is? So, like, I think I was just it was the wrong time and the wrong place for me to enjoy that kind of a movie.
Have you seen the Quentin Tarantino Top Gun monologue?
No.
Oh my God.
What, he just gives a monologue?
Well, maybe I will link to that in the Facebook as well, so everybody can. I'll try and find it on YouTube or something. I think it's the movie Sleep With Me. It's like this little indie movie. It's around the time, like, Reservoir Dogs had come out. I don't know if Pulp Fiction had come out yet, but Tarantino was, like, making appearances in movies. He was in, like, a Spike Lee movie. He was, like, this was when he was, like, deluding himself into, like, well, I just became a director so I could get my acting career off the ground.
Right.
And then they had him do a movie, I think it was Sleep With Me, where they basically just wrote in the script, Quentin comes on and does his thing. Because apparently Quentin Tarantino and Roger Avery, because Roger Avery got upset that he used this without crediting him, they had a little monologue that they did about Top Gun. And the less said about it, the better. But if it's not linked to our site, see if you can find it or watch the movie Sleep With Me. But Quentin Tarantino talking about Top Gun is amazing, and it may change your whole mind about Top Gun.
Okay.
Anyway,
well,
but,
I mean, and I don't mean to judge Vision Quest on the sins of Top Gun or whatever, right. But I'm sitting here talking to you, I heard myself going, it fucking sucks. And then I was doing a bit of analysis on myself and was like, well, why am I feeling that way? I was very much in process mode of like, why is it making me so angry? And then I had the vision of the asshole in junior high and I'm like, oh, I'm just mad at this guy.
Right.
I bet the movie's fine.
Right. Well, that can affect you. I mean, fans of a thing can really, like, you know, people got bent out of shape because of all the Twilight fans. And it's like, well, they're just showing their love for a thing.
Well,
man.
That movie's pretty terrible. But also pretty enjoyable. But,
yeah. I mean, you know, people got their things. Anyways, Vision Quest. The funny thing is I don't remember more specifics than what I get. I mean, there's a couple of things I remember very specifically, but I don't want to ruin the magic for you.
Sure.
Yeah, I just remember, I mean, there's like, I swear to you, there's even like a montage where he's training and he's like jumping rope and it's like in a gym, but there's a spotlight on him like Flashdance style. I mean, the movie is stylistic, okay. And I don't remember who directed it, so I can't even speak to that, but the movie is like, it's got a style and it's got a purpose and stuff is done, you know, with intent. It's just, okay, does the movie know what it is? Because I feel like there's this real razor thin line that it rides where it's like, yeah, it knows what it is, but it can't, you know, it's not going to wink to you because that's not this movie.
Sure.
And if it's good that way. I mean, again, when I saw it the first time, I was impressed. I was like, oh, that's actually not the movie that I thought it was. And it was better than I thought it would be.
So besides Mr. Log Carrier,
right.
What's like one of your strongest memories in the movie? If I don't know how much you remember of it, but like what sticks out in your mind is
actually one of my strongest memories of the movie is something that I don't want to blow for you.
Oh, okay.
Longino.
Okay.
But it involves his relationship with Linda Fiorentino. And again, because she's an older woman, she's coming at it from a whole different perspective. Like, yeah, I'm kind of dabbling with this high school. I don't know. It might even be like semi-statutory rape. I don't even know. But like, she keeps kind of like questioning, like, why are you into this kind of a thing? It's like, yeah, we're both sort of attracted to each other, but you've got kind of better things to do, don't you? And it sort of comes out in odd ways. And I remember liking that because that's not something you generally see in movies of this kind. It's usually they're in love and, you know, there's usually no conflict to that. It's
right.
Like, the conflict is like you say, there's like, oh, it's like a bully.
Right.
Or, yeah.
Or two people like the same person.
Right. It's antagonizing with another person. And there might be that. There might be another dude involved. I just don't remember.
That's interesting.
Honestly, it's just so 80s, this movie. I mean, not as 80s as Top Gun, admittedly, sure. But it is like...
Well, it sounds pretty 80s. I mean, that template of a sort of arc for a character, and I'll credit Trey Parker and Matt Stone with this, because they talk about Top Gun a lot when they made Team America World Police, but they make fun of this 80s archetypal arc, which is like, I'm the shit. No, wait, no, I'm not. Yes, I am.
Yes, I am.
It's like, that was a super 80s, like a normal hero's journey, like a Luke Skywalker journey is like, I'm a nobody farmer,
right,
all the way to I'm the hero.
Right.
That's called like an interesting journey. But if your arc is like, I fucking beat everyone in the heavyweight class and I'm so fucking cool and let me put on my shades and I'm 80s as shit. And then I'm so great that let me challenge myself with this other thing. And then there's a little midsection of like, maybe I'm not so great. And
maybe I've bit off more than I can chew.
Yes, I'm the best. Like that is so 80s.
Right.
Like we're super fucking successful. I mean, even the greatest movies ever, like Back to the Future or something, like it's kind of has something like that. Like I'm a rad ass front man for a band. I got the girl. I got my skateboard. I'm the shit. Oh, wait, maybe I'm not. Oh, yes, oh, I yes, am. Yes. It's like, it's that same thing. Oh, and I have an even better car. Upgrade.
Right.
You know, it's like that 80s crap is terrible. But, you know, so I don't know how much it leans into that. But that's what I'm sort of gleaning from what you talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that strikes me is it's just, it's kind of generic 80s, but people taking it seriously enough. Not even just like, well, we're taking it seriously because, you know. It's hard to describe what I'm describing, but it's like people taking their thing seriously, but not the movie being so serious that it can't breathe a little, I guess.
Sure. Mr. Nelson.
Yes.
Is Vision Quest going to hold up after we watch it?
Yes. That's what I'll say. I have no good reason to say that, but I'm going to say yes. I have a fond memory for it, you know, I remember the trailer on HBO more vividly than I remember the actual movie. But for some reason, when I finally saw it, I was like, oh, man, that was worth all the wait. That was worth the buildup. I remember being very delighted with the movie. So I'm going to rely on that.
Well, this is one of the hardest ones I've ever had to do this for because I have little to no information other than what you've just told me. Obviously, I've heard of Matthew Modine and I know Linda Fiorentino and I sort of know 80s sports movies. But I usually, even with like Pump Up the Volume, which I'd never seen, I have like Christian Slater and an image of him as a DJ.
Right.
There's nothing in popular culture that has given me any information about this movie.
Oh, you know what I should add?
Certainly.
Tonally, Hoosiers. It's a lot.
Oh, okay.
Tonally, it feels like Hoosiers.
Okay.
So let me add that to the mix, if that helps.
Okay. Well, I liked Hoosiers, so...
Everybody loves Hoosiers.
Yeah, there you go. So I think, given little to no information, I generally would lean towards it holds up, because I have nothing, no evidence to the contrary.
Right.
Nothing, no spidey senses tingling that it's going to be terrible. So, yes, Vision Quest, it's going to hold up.
Great.
And I'll tell you what, if a fucking janitor gives him peyote and he goes on a real vision quest, it's going to really hold up. I'm hoping that happens.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the janitor gave him good advice because, you know, they couldn't avoid that Mr. Miyagi cliche if they tried, but...
Well, it's a cliche for a reason.
That's true.
Yes, a 80s minority helps out a white man. It's, you know, right. A tale as old as time.
The magical 80s minority. Oh, Lord. All righty. Well,
without further ado, we shall go on our own vision quest, and we'll be right back.
At first, all Loudon Swain could think of was getting in shape. But since he met the girl of his dreams, all he can think of is her shape.
You're not from around here, are you?
Are you kidding me? Trenton, New Jersey.
She doesn't have any transportation or any place to stay or anything, and I was wondering, maybe we can ask her to stay with us.
Night, guys.
And now that she's moved into his house,
who's that girl?
He can't keep his mind on what he's doing.
The girl of my dreams lives under my own roof. I see her every day, but she thinks I'm a kid, immature, a dumb jock. All of which is more or less true.
Wanna know what turns me on? Hands. Really big hands.
And he certainly can't do what's on his mind.
You know that sexual intercourse burns up 200 calories a shot? By the way.
But give the guy a break. When you're in love, you can do some seriously crazy things. This is the new film from the executive producers of Flashdance. Vision Quest.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. We have returned from our own Vision Quest and have now seen the film Vision Quest. Nelson, how you doing?
I am feeling magnificent. I'm pumped.
I don't know if I heard Journey enough times.
You heard it at least three.
Nor Madonna.
Yeah, exactly. They were not shy about pumping the 80s music and reusing it at will.
Woo. It was every other scene.
Journey had Only the Young on three times. You know, I like the way they do that, though. I mean, it's a good way to start because the movie starts with him in a jogging montage against Journey's Only the Young. Then there's another point in the movie that we'll get to where they play Only the Young again and he's running. Again, and then at the end of the movie, they triumphantly play Journey. So it is a nice 1-2-3 beat.
Well, movies kind of used to do that, where they would just kind of hit the same song every other scene. I think in recent memory, Drive kind of did a similar thing.
That's kind of true.
You almost take a song and make it like the theme to your
movie,
a
score,
and just hit it a bunch. So I don't really mind. Yeah,
they also had a Tangerine Dream score. So this is totally 80s.
It was 80s.
It
checks out.
Dude, this thing was sopping wet with 80s. It's like, I forgot all the people that's in this. Ronnie Cox, Forrest Whitaker, I don't remember his name, but the old dude from Home Alone that Kevin McAllister befriends. I mean...
Yes, the ice barrel killer, supposed,
right.
Grandpa from Home Alone.
Jake Ryan from 16 Candles plays his bestie friend with the unfortunate name Cooch.
Cooch.
who is
unfortunate. What are you talking about?
Now, I had forgotten. The funny thing is, like, I had, you know, talked about how there's cultural appropriation in this movie, how they're like,
oh yes.
But the great thing is that's the actual story. It is actual cultural appropriation, and it's not like, oh well, we just have the magical Native American dude who drops some knowledge. It's a white guy who says, well, I'm half Native American and you're going on a vision quest, and then later on you find out it's all bullshit. Yeah, he's just white.
I actually did appreciate that, because he has a friend Cooch who has a mohawk and fancies himself Native American.
Yeah, he's got like beads in his thing.
And so based on my prediction, I was like, well, this checks out. Here he is, a Native American friend. And yeah, halfway through the movie, he's just like, I made all that shit up. Like,
yeah.
Basically just ripping it off.
He's just trying to give himself some kind of identity because he's abused at home and has, you know, very little to identify himself otherwise, I guess. So, but there's tons of people in it. And, well, let me ask you, I mean, what did you think of the man himself?
Well, to add to one moment, we should add a final cast member, which is the princess from Spaceballs.
Right. Daphne.
whose name I don't recall.
Zuniga?
Yeah.
Something like that.
And she's in Melrose Place, too. She was playing the, like, she's all that news reporter with a ponytail and glasses who clearly had the hots for our lead. And he paid her nary a mind.
He barely noticed her. Though I feel like at the end, there's sort of the hint that, like, yeah, you know, they'll probably end up together. Because, you know, the main older woman, she's leaving town. You know, she's got to go ride the rails. And, you know, any port in a storm. So what did you think of Matthew Modine in this movie?
It really interesting role for him. And actually a really interesting lead character. The movie was sort of unique in that, you know, it's like he was both a jock and a scholar at the same time. Usually those kind of movies are very straightforward, very simple. You know, he's our hero. He's the shit, you know, and he sort of rises up and does his thing. And what's interesting is the movie sort of had him be a jock, had him be like physically impressive, have him talking about, you know, weight and calories and all this stuff. And all the dudes loved him and stuff. But like, it took its time to give him some vulnerable moments that you don't really normally see in this kind of a 80s sports movie.
Yeah.
That I found really intriguing. So he's sort of weirdly sensitive in a way. He's into poetry. He's very into female anatomy.
He thinks he's going to be a space doctor, and so he keeps studying anatomy, and he eventually lands on the clitoris.
Yeah. Oh, you know, as we all tend to at some
eventually,
point.
Eventually, yeah.
Or not. You know?
Right.
But
as is probably the case.
But it was interesting, and he's very sort of Linda Fiorentino as a quote-unquote older woman. She's only like 3 years older than him. Well, he's 18, she's 21.
He's just turned 18, and she's 21, but she's been 21 since she's 14. the funny thing is, like, on the one hand, it's like she plays the older woman as like a very like much older woman. Like, she's completely like removed from his world. But there was something about that I really liked, that she was like, yeah, they're only 3 years apart, but they are a world apart as far as maturity goes.
That's kind of the way it is at that age. Like, three years is nothing as an adult, but, you know, a high school kid and an out of high school, you know, adult woman,
right?
There is a rift there, and certainly in terms of experience, she seemed far more experienced. That was the other thing I found really interesting, is they have this whole sort of plot. His sexuality and is at the forefront of the movie. He's literally like sniffing panties and stuff, which by the way, that was a really interesting scene that I really enjoyed. So like, Linda Fiorentino has come to town. She has some like financial problems. His dad gets fired sort of defending her honor at a car dealership or something. And she ends up just staying with them. And so while she's there, there's like a little, you know, it's flirtation, and he's sort of interested in her. And then it escalates just immediately with, like, he's looking at the laundry, sees her panties. I literally was like, what is he going to do, panty sniff? He does.
He starts sniffing them.
And not in a curious, like, oh, let me check him out from, he goes, dives all the way in, like covering his face.
Deep dives into
deep
her
panties. Deep breathing, like he's Dennis Hopper in Blue Velvet, like full, like, And then Linda Fiorentino just walks up and he's like, hey, and he plays it pretty fine. He's like, just getting the laundry.
I was just here to get a shirt. And she's like, looks at him. And then he gets this big smile like, yeah, what are you going to do?
But she just kind of not laughs it off, but kind of just walks away. And so It's interesting because the movie makes no bones about he's attracted to her and whatever. But when it comes to the point where they're going to kind of get together, he tells, and this is what I mean about him being sensitive. He confesses his virginity to her in this very interesting scene that, like, you wouldn't normally see.
Right.
Normally our hero, you know, be it Rocky or fucking whoever, is just all male.
Right.
Is completely versed in the ways of sex and is not. It's like for him to be both a macho dude and this vulnerable, naive, like, kid who's kind of coming of age,
right,
and learning about these things. That was a dynamic that was really interesting. But as a mild aside, when he confesses his virginity, he tells the craziest fucking story as if it's nothing. And it's horrifying. Like,
there's a few moments in this that are like, whoa. Like, okay, so so we get past it, they're sitting at a campfire. They're on the way to see his grandfather. This is well into the story.
Sure.
They're sitting at a campfire, on the way to see his, you know, old grandpa. And they're sitting by the fire. He's confessing that he's a virgin. And then he says, I didn't have to be, you know. I could have done it at eighth grade. We were in my friend's basement, and they were taking turns on his sister. But I kind of felt bad for it. It's like, what the fuck is this shit?
Was the worst foreplay I've ever seen in the history of foreplay. And like, this fucking creep story.
I mean, on the one hand, that particular one, it's like, well, if you think you're going to get anywhere with this. But this guy had already said, like, you know, working out a lot gives me a lot of nocturnal emissions. He's gone, like, he's already, like, full bore, like, you know, telling this chick whatever comes to his mind.
Right.
So, I mean, there is something to that where it's just like, well, you know, as long as I'm telling you that I'm, you know, having all these wet dreams, I might as well tell you that there was this really disturbing way that most of my friends lost their virginity, but I didn't.
Right. And not to let him off the hook, because we should also talk about a few scenes prior to that where there's sort of this. He thinks that Linda Fiorentino is seeing his teacher because he's walking down the street, sees her at the diner with him, and presumes them to be a couple, or at least that they're having sex or something. So he starts giving Linda Fiorentino the cold shoulder. She sort of confronts him and is like, what happened? Why are you treating me like shit? And he's basically confessing his love for her and being like, he's mad that you're fucking this other guy. And then it kind of escalates into like, what's your problem, man? What's going on? He's like, he's like bleeding. And he just basically assaults Linda Fiorentino, like grabs her, pins her to the bed.
Rips her the front of her shirt right off.
It's like just, I guess the idea is he's like so sexually pent up, he's just freaking out. And then she, thankfully, gets up, stops the whole thing. And she gives him, to the movie's credit, at least gives him a speech about what being a real man is about. And it's sort of like, a real fucking man doesn't do this high school shit.
Right.
A real man, like, listens and cares about a woman and, you know, whatever. So thank God she at least said that. But at the same time, it was, like, pretty fucked up because he was definitely assaulting her.
Well, that's the only thing that saves that scene, because if he assaults her and, like, almost anything else happens, then you're like, well, okay, so now he's kind of half a rapist already.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's, like, he kind of does, and, I mean, you don't forgive it, but it's like the way he kind of goes after her, it's in another 80s movie and another testosterone fueled type movie. If fucking, you know, Sylvester Stallone was in a movie with a girl and ripped the front of her shirt off, it would be sexy. And in this one, it was assaultive and not fun.
Right.
And so they played it for what it would really look like, which I appreciate. And he got told, you know, dressed down for it. Now, he probably should have gotten a little worse than, you know, kind of a tongue lashing from Linda Fiorentino about it. But at least, I mean, especially for the time, there was a lot of things that, like, for the time were actually, like, super progressive. Like, the fact that she's, like, she's her own woman. She doesn't, you know, at the very beginning, they're like, well, this girl's kind of been around, and they, you know, kind of slut shame her a little bit. But then she sort of just takes it as, like, well, I do what I want to do. Why shouldn't I? You guys do. Fuck off. And that's the end of it. There's no more, like, we're going to, you know, her plot is not like, well, we're going to teach her to be a lady or whatnot. It just is like, well, she is who she is.
There actually was a lot of ways in which the movie was sort of subverting my expectations on a lot of how these scenes would normally go, especially in the fucking 80s. Like, let's be clear. This is not like a 2019 movie. Like, this movie came out in the 80s.
85.
So the things we're talking about, while they are problematic and we should address them, honestly, like you said, would be incredibly progressive for the time.
Yeah.
Because that scene normally, what's your problem? Because I fucking love you. And then this sort of assault.
Mm-hmm.
In any other movie from that time, or a fucking James Bond movie or whatever, would just turn into them having sex and her being okay with it. I mean, we talked about Red Butler a couple of like episodes ago.
Yeah.
that would be the thing. So for this movie to have him like go that direction, her shut it down and then shame him for it rightfully.
Right.
And him sort of take a lesson from it is really interesting. In the same way, there's a scene early on in the movie where he's working at a hotel, is sort of like a bellhop or a guy delivering room service. And he shows up at this guy's room and he's delivering room service and the guy's doing Tai Chi.
The white dude doing Tai Chi.
And then he's sort of like, hey, I'm into sports like Tai Chi. That's cool. Show me some moves. And the guy starts showing him some moves and he's like, oh, no. Let me show you how to do it. Sort of like turns, gets behind him.
Yeah, dirty dancing, starts showing him how the moves are done with his
hand
on his back.
The old, like, I'll show you how to swing a golf club or a bat or whatever. And then he starts kind of fondling our main character, and the main character's like, whoa, you know, because he's sort of freaked out. And any other movie at this time in the mid-80s, I thought for sure he was about to get really defensive and just start screaming at this guy or beat him up or whatever.
Or insult him or anything.
But he's sort of like oddly flattered by it. And he's just kind of like, oh, hey, I'm sorry. And he very politely sort of removes himself from the situation. And then when his friend later, he tells him about it, he's not like, can you fucking believe that this homo touched me or whatever? You know, he's literally just like, yeah, this guy made a move on me.
This guy made a move on me.
That had never happened to me before. That's kind of interesting. I didn't really know what to do.
Yeah, like it was almost too bad that I wasn't into it.
Yeah, I was like, what? I was really impressed by that because I imagine I don't quite know why that scene's there or what purpose it's serving other than just a kind of an awkward moment with our hero and him and his sexuality. And whatever. I mean, it's a fucking movie about wrestlers and there's all these fucking sweaty dudes wrestling each other the whole movie. And there's a lot of bro down love. And like,
right.
I don't know if the movie's consciously has like a homoeroticism, but it's kind of there.
That's
scene was interesting to me.
Yeah, if you put it up with that lens, it's like maybe they're just like, maybe that's the director dropping a hint like, oh, there's going to be plenty of this, kids. Don't you worry. Or it could just be, again, in the 80s, for him to be that, I mean, we're talking about that he's a jock, but he's sensitive. The fact that he sort of addresses this maturely, this encounter, that, I mean, in the 80s, that would have, like, made him basically like, oh, God, you're a pussy for putting up with that shit. It's like, and the fact that he's just sort of like, that was all right, is, again, showing that he's sensitive, showing that he's different than, you know, you'd expect. I think, I mean, if I was to guess why that scene's there, I'm guessing it's just to show how different a jock he is from what you've normally seen.
Right. It's sort of like, oh, your normal hero would be so offended by this, they punch him in the face or something.
Right.
But look at him, you know, sort of showing mercy and, like, being sensitive about it. And,
right.
Yeah, it was this weird, like, hybrid of jock and poet that you really don't see that often. I mean, we were joking about Top Gun, but let me fucking tell you, Tom Cruise in Top Gun is not in a poetry class analyzing a poem about life and death. And this sort of the mantra of the movie seems to be this thing about we're all going to die someday. And is it, should you face, you know, the reality of your own imminent death and live your life to the fullest and like go on a vision quest and
well,
do
yeah.
what you will like that. It's very much a coming of age movie of just like him and Linda Fiorentino aren't going to be married with 20 kids. She's leaving.
Right.
And it's just, he even says, like, I wouldn't change a thing, would do it again. They kind of have this sweet goodbye where it's acknowledging the life experience they had. And it's so like, what the fuck? Was this made in, like, 2005? Like, I don't understand. Like, it's so
it's
hard to kind of parse.
Well, which is, I think that's why I remember it. That's why I kind of enjoyed it, is because it's like, the movie kind of undercuts what you're expecting. And again, the stakes could not be lower. They make they make epic fucking stakes out of he's got to lose 15 pounds or whatever it is. And it's from the beginning, it's just, oh my fucking, and they, I had forgotten how much they talk up his opponent, the enemy wrestler before you.
Right.
Like for a half an hour, they talk about this guy, Shoot. Oh my God, you're going to wrestle Shoot. Oh my. And they talk about him like a gunslinger going into town. And if you wrestle Bad Bart, you're going to get shot down like a dog.
Oh,
like,
shit, dude.
Basically, they're all talking about it as if he's going to die. And I'm like, this is a high school wrestling match. And teachers included, they're all like, ugh, you wrestle Shoot, you might actually get your back broken. And then they introduce him, you know, walking up the bleachers with the log on his back. That was exactly as I told you, right?
To
oh my God. Dude's sweating and kind of looking at him funny. Shoot was amazing though. And I just love that they like hold off like revealing the villain. And then when they reveal him, it's not, you know, he's not quite as sinister as I remember him, but he stands very big in memory because He's just kind of a normal dude, but a little more thick, I guess. Just like thick in the look. You know, he's a big muscular dude, but like he just has that like thousand yard stare where he looks at the dude and he's just sort of like, oh, you're going to make the weight. And you just are getting, like, he's got nothing to him except, like, I just can't wait to eat this dude.
Oh, yeah.
The only sort of emotion you get from him later on is when they're wrestling, the final scene where they're wrestling, and they've got to do the thing where, like, Matthew Modine gets on his all fours and then Shoot's got to, you know, grab him from the back. He, like, gently, like, puts his hands on his arms and gently lays his head down on him like he's about to kiss him.
In
and
he like has a full close-up, too.
Yeah, and yeah. He's got a look. Shoot's got this look on his face like... like sensuous desire. Is it like, I can't, I'm getting a boner thinking of killing this guy. But that's all you
get.
That's
what I mean,
but
I was kind of picking up on that too. Like, yeah, there is a weird, like, intimate sort of, and didn't he say he wrote a school paper on intimacy or something like that? Am I making that up?
He wrote the school paper on the clitoris, right?
Well, was it the clitoris?
But this is before this?
No, there's a scene with his dad where they're like, hey, what are you writing your paper on? And he was like, yes, I'm writing it on the clitoris and intimacy or something.
Oh,
and he's
okay.
Like, are you sure you want to write about that? And he's like, hey, come on, man.
Well, we're grown-ups.
It's the present. It's a new age or something.
Right.
Yeah. There is this weird, like, intimacy theme in the movie, and I don't think it's an accident, or maybe it's some subconscious thing
that this
Tinder wrestling is like the metaphor of life or something. Like, it's just these sweaty, beautiful men of the 80s who hate each other's guts, just fucking in slow motion, laying their heads on each other's backs and then looking.
No, you had it right. You had it right. They're fucking in slow motion.
Yeah.
Whenever they're wrestling, what they're really doing is fucking. That's what they're doing.
It's there, like,
yeah,
I'm not,
for sure.
I don't quite know exactly what they mean by it, but yeah,
I don't know if he means anything by it. I think it really, I mean, there is maybe, I don't know, maybe unconscious, subconscious, whatever, but I do think he's filming it like, yeah, sure, it's a wrestling match. It's also kind of sexual, isn't it? I mean, it might just be that's his whole point. The director of this, by the way, Harold Becker, he didn't direct much, but one of his other movies that I love is Malice, and that's another one of those movies that just takes you by surprise. You're like, okay, I'm expecting one thing, especially from the advertising, and then it becomes totally another. But I may leave that out for bringing that in one day, because you haven't seen that.
No,
either,
I have not seen Malice. So yeah. Actually, given that this movie, which was really interesting, I would like to see Malice and see what he brings to that. One question I had for you. You mentioned that there was a few things you remembered about the movie that you didn't want to spoil for
right.
me or mention
yes.
before we watch it. So what were those things, and were they as you remembered them?
They were, and I'm glad I actually didn't bring them up. One was the scene that Linda Fiorentino and... Matthew Modine have gone to see his grandfather, as we've said, and there's a lot of sexual tension happening between them. They see the grandpa for like 30 seconds. They like had 10 minutes of buildup for this 30-second meet and grandpa scene, and then they basically wander off in the woods and, you know, start getting intimate, and then they fuck. And then, you don't even see it. They're just wandering in a field, and then she like puts her hand on his cheek, and then they start kissing. Cut to them in the truck heading back, and you know they've had sex because
right.
the dude who has been studiously avoiding eating food is munching a pizza. Like, and she's trying to tell him don't eat too much of it. You know, you're supposed to be in training, and he's the one that's, and it's a great, and the reason I remember it is because he takes this whole thing, the whole movie, he's been so fucking serious about, I'm going to wrestle Shoot. And everybody's like, you can't wrestle Shoot. It's fine. And everybody's been treating it with such seriousness. And it's the first time anybody in the movie, and it's the main character, says, I don't even know what I was thinking. I don't know why I wanted to do that. It just seems so stupid.
Right.
And it's just like putting, and then she's like, no, I want you to keep doing what you want to do. And he's like, I don't know. I kind of just want to eat a pizza and fuck. You know?
It's right.
Like, and that scene was great. And I loved it. And it was as good as I remembered it. The other scene that I remembered is he's about to wrestle Shoot. He's, you know, he's, first of all, he's running late to his own wrestling match. And everybody's like, oh my God, he's not going to be here. And they're ready to forfeit him. And Shoot's about to win by forfeit. He runs in, starts stripping off his clothes for the way down. Gets on the scale. Oh, he fails the weight. Oh, fuck. What's he doing? And then he just whips off every stitch of clothing. He's butt naked and then, like, breathes out and, like, steps on the scale. And his buddy's like, think light. And then he magically makes the weight.
Right.
The thing I remember the most about that scene really was just like him being naked and then him like expelling all his oxygen just to make sure like no extra weight is
doing
in his body.
Some like Navajo magic or like some
To me, it was just like, I don't want anything extra, anything I can get rid of in this moment. I'm going to. I just thought that was it was very vivid in my memory. And I think it worked just as well today.
I'm glad you brought up the sort of post-coital pizza scene, because one thing I find really fascinating is, for a movie that is all about sexuality and sex, and I mean, I think it's very telling that after he has sex, he's like, what was I even thinking about?
Right.
Basically all but admitting this is all just some sort of sex drive or whatever.
Right.
He's like all pent up and has all this sex energy that he's getting out in his wrestling or whatever. But this was the age of like Porky's and Revenge of the Nerds.
Right.
For this is incredibly restrained for the 80s, for them to kiss in a field, lovingly and sensually just kiss in a field, and then just hard cut to, we missed it.
Yeah.
And he's eating pizza.
And you see a little bit of it, because later they get home and they have a little bit of silhouette undressing, but that's all you see.
There's it is incredibly restrained. Like, there's virtually no nudity, really, of Linda Fiorentino. When the scene where we are introduced to her, there's a little, like, she's wearing a tight shirt.
Right.
And goes, take a picture to last longer. Look at it, fellas. You know, that kind of thing. So at first I was like, oh, okay, we're typical 80s.
Right.
Like, we're going to see her showering in 10 minutes. And like, no. Like, I was like super impressed that they were that restrained.
And even that had a reason. I mean, I think that scene exists for that reason. It's like, she's wearing an undershirt. You can see she's not wearing a bra, so you can see her, you know, underneath. But the reason that she's wearing that shirt is not like, well, this is what I wear and go fuck yourself. Ronnie Cox, who is the father who has defended her honor, you realize the shirt, he's like bleeding from the knuckles because he popped this dude, and the shirt that is wrapped around his hand is her shirt. It's what she was wearing over it. It's just that, you know, she obviously gave it to him to staunch the bleeding, and it's like, oh, okay. So she's half naked, not on purpose. It just happened as all this stuff happened off screen. I don't know. There's a lot of like you say, there's not things don't happen by accident, and there's not a lot of like exploitation in the movie, even though it's like ripe for exploitation. I don't know. It was just like, there's a lot of thinking going on, and even the stuff that's like kind of like questionable, like, oh, he assaults her, and, you know, he tells this great other story of sexual assault. It's like, it's kind of gross and it's kind of like off-putting, but it's also like they treat it with the seriousness it deserves, and they don't pretend that this shit wouldn't have happened in the world. You know what I mean?
Well, and they're not afraid to have your main character look totally naive and kind of dumb, honestly, like, because he's a high school kid. He's very young. As soon as he confesses his virginity and stuff, like, he's saying things that me as an adult, like, I'm kind of cringing at, being like, oh dude, what, why would you say that? And the movie just kind of lets him be an idiot sometimes,
right,
but not in a glorifying way. Like, there's this scene where I guess Linda Fiorentino is like, I shouldn't have to tell you this, and nor is it any of your business, but let me just kind of reassure you that I didn't have sex with your teacher. We just like going out and talking. That's what you saw, and like, just to put you at ease. And I'm like, okay, well, that was very mature of her. And then the next scene with the teacher, he gets up, walks over, takes fucking an eternity, and is like, listen, thank you for being such a good teacher. Oh, thanks,
dot,
kid.
Dot, dot.
Thanks for telling me. He's like, yeah, you know, you really are a pretty great teacher, and I really appreciate it. Oh, thank you. Yeah, I also appreciate you not sticking it to my girl. Thanks, bro. And I'm just like, what? Like, I was like,
why would you tell somebody that?
And the teacher's like, anytime? Like, okay. And it just lets him. And then he walks off, and I don't think he's meant to seem cool or like a suave, slick joke telling guy. Like, he kind of looks dumb doing that.
Yeah.
And it just sort of allows him his adolescence or his kind of young adulthood and his idiocy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of what the whole movie is about. I mean, there's a point, you know, at one point, because he's decided, well, I'm going to, you know, lose all this weight to wrestle this guy. Why? I don't know. Just because I have this boner for,
like,
fighting this guy.
The entire point of the, I love that scene in the car. You're totally right. Because everything the movie hinges on, he just throws in the trash. It's just like, I don't even know what I was thinking. That was just fucking stupid.
Right.
And then two scenes later, his coworker is comparing him to Pele and making it like he's a god on earth or something.
Right.
Explaining, weeping, tears in his eyes, why he loves seeing feats of of human, you know, wonder, and just for a moment he senses a purpose to life.
Right, he feels connected to the great energy of life.
It both makes his wrestling to be like the most important thing that's ever happened in the history of humanity, and then also like a worthless, silly endeavor that was just to pin up sexual aggression. Like, it's all of it. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I like also, I just love how low the stakes are in this. Is it like, well, if you wrestle shoot, you're going to get a wrestling scholarship? No. And his coach even says, if you want a wrestling scholarship, don't do this. This is the wrong way to do it. And it's like, he keeps saying, well, I'm going to go to college. And you assume, yeah, he's probably going to go to college. But he's also like, yeah, but it's also contingent on me getting a wrestling scholarship and, you know, figuring out how to pay for the rest. And he's kind of, you know, and it leaves that up in the air. It's like, well, he might have gotten a wrestling scholarship. He probably did, but he probably didn't get to go to some highfalutin school or what. I mean, but I like the loose ends that the movie leaves as loose ends, because it's like, well, yeah, I mean, he's a kid. This one moment in his life maybe helped define his attitude, but it didn't change anything, you know, because they say that a few times. It's like, man, nothing's ever going to be the same after this. And it totally is. I mean, it's like, it's this complete like nothing moment.
Well, that's why to me, the best I can wring out of it is it's just straight up coming of age movie. Sort of like, I'm in my last year of high school and a virgin.
Yeah.
And now we go into this, and now I'm a champion, and I've had sex with this woman.
Yeah.
And now I'm a little wiser, and you know, do what you can with the time you have in this world. I did this, and now I'll continue to kind of live it day by day.
Yeah. Well, the great thing is there's two stories going on, which is the wrestling story and the romance. And the romance happens in sort of, and then she, you know, runs away before the match because she didn't want him to give up on his dream. And then he does the match, but it's like, well, he did the match and he did the romance, but the romance is really the thing that changed him the most. You know, the wrestling thing is just like, well, I wanted to do this thing and then I did it and I won, so that paid off nicely. But I think the thing he's really going to remember for the rest of his life is like, I slept with this girl and it was awesome, dude.
Right.
And then I had the best pizza of my life afterwards.
Oh, also, another role reversal. Let's give this movie credit, especially in the fucking 80s. I know he has his little assault basement scene, which is pretty terrible. Other than that, every fucking move is made by Linda Fiorentino,
right?
By the way.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
He's too chicken shit to do anything. Like, he's kind of trying to put the moves.
Right.
But she's the one that kisses him first. She's the one that's basically like, let's do this thing.
Right.
You know, she turns him down on the scene where you would think, and I thought for sure they were fucking. they're camping out in the dark, lights up, it's full Brokeback Mountain. I was just like, it's on, here it is, this is the scene. He's telling his virgin story and everything is screaming they're about to have sex.
Right.
And then she's just kind of like, good night. Turns off the light.
Well, and not even just that. I mean, before she says good night, he's basically talking about like, oh, you know, sex is actually the most important thing if you're a dude.
Yeah.
And she's like, it's not. Trust me. Yeah. You're going to, you know, once you've done it, you will get over it. That's the other thing, too, is it's like, it's this very mature, like, dude, I know what it's like. I'm telling you, I understand where you're at, but it's also not the big thing. You're putting so much on this, and it just doesn't change anything. Yep. It's like the wrestling match. It's like, it doesn't change that much, you know?
And she's got the keys to the car. She's driving.
Right.
She's just like, nope, not tonight. Yeah. And then we get to grandpa's, and then midday, she's like, how about now?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, fucking of course right now. Let's do
anytime,
this.
Dude.
But it was like,
I'll stop the wrestling match in the middle to fuck you.
Fucking flabbergasted that it was totally just her choice, her time, on her time, when she wanted. And the restraint of just hard cutting to pizza. And then to give him the vulnerability, by the way, in that pizza scene, the other thing he says is he goes like, so I was pretty good, right?
Right.
Was I good? Like this weird, vulnerable, like he's nervous about if he was a good lay or not. And she's just laughing, doesn't even answer.
Right.
And leaves him hanging like, I guess I was good. I don't know.
Whatever.
That's just crazy. Like, that's not your typical hero at all. Like,
yeah.
It's really interesting.
Well, I think that's the whole movie. That's why I remembered it. It's like there's all these different, it's him making interesting choices as an actor. You know, the writing being interesting, just, you know, zigging just a little bit left instead of going right. I mean, I like that it's mostly just subtle. And the Hoosiers thing turned out to be way appropriate.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like that kind of a movie. It's like, again, such low stakes, such a, like, closed environment. It's like they're in Spokane, Washington, which is not like the smallest town ever, but it's also like, you know, very, his life is very insular. He's got this very, like, contained life. And just to, I don't know. It just, and the film looked great. I mean, it was like lived in. It's got that thing that we've talked about where it's like real people in real space and it looks like they live in that shitty house and like, you know, there's shit on the walls and, you know, it's just really thought through.
You know what? This actually sums out of the best, I think. This movie is like if Jack Kerouac made like a Rocky movie or something. Like, it's that fucking weird. It's like if Any Given Sunday and Dead Poets Society were like the same movie. I think that's why I can't logically understand it.
Right.
Because it has all the trappings and tropes of those movies, but it's all this highfalutin poetry, like, what does life really mean stuff. Like, it's fascinating to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I say wrestling movie and you get a whole different thing in your head, right?
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was glad when, because we went through almost the whole movie, I was just looking at my notes and I was like, oh yeah, I had remembered that he was like jumping rope in a spotlight, speaking of like the art of the movie.
Oh yes.
And they had not had him jumping rope in a spotlight. I was like, did I make that up in my head? Because there's been a couple of jump rope scenes for sure, and maybe I just conflated it. And then they got to the full on, like,
oh yeah,
right before the wrestling match, there's just a spot, and he just starts like,
it went full flash dance.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Doing full flash dance, like doing moves in the spotlight, you know, working out. And I'm sure this is like Matthew Modine's like favorite shot, because he's like, oh fuck, I was so young and so in shape, a muscular Greek god.
Oh, I want to mention that too. Matthew Modine is a really interesting cast because he's not. He doesn't have the look of like the wrestler that's going to destroy you or something. Right. Like, he just looks like a nerdy dude.
Right.
He's so interesting for that part.
Yeah.
And all the, he doesn't look, there's a million other guys that look like jocks that are all in his class or his opponents.
Right.
He doesn't look like that. Like, it's he's interesting for that role.
Well, and also, I mean, you know, credit where credit is due. Both of them, even though I think they were both like 25, 26 years old in the making of this movie, he looked like a teenager, and he looked like kind of a like normal teenager. Like, you know, his hair's always kind of messy, and you know, his clothes are kind of, you know, they're fine. They're not like cheap, but they're not like, you know, they're not holy and shit, but they're not like super expensive or anything. The only thing that's distinct about his clothing is he wears this rubber silvery suit to jog in.
I guess it's to sweat and lose weight.
Right. Yeah.
But he looks like a spaceman. Like, it's really silly looking.
Well, it's funny. He keeps saying, you know, I want to be a doctor, an astronaut doctor or whatever. And then he runs around in this spacesuit.
It's always fun when a movie is sort of both in expectation and completely against them. Like, I love movies that are hard to define. Like, I was fully ready for just like Stock City. And it's weird. It's like, it sort of felt like one of those movies, but at the same time, not at all.
Right.
In a way that, I mean, I don't want to equate it to David Lynch, like it's a David Lynch movie, but kind of in that way where like, it's like, this should be a mystery movie, but like, what the fuck is going on in this movie? I mean, this movie makes sense in a way. It's not like avant-garde, but it's kind of like dipping its toe in there.
Right.
Well, I found that interesting.
I think they make kind of artistic decisions. They just keep them all grounded. There's not like, there's not people breathing in weird masks for no reason. And, you know, everything has its place. It's just everything's chosen well.
Yep. Yeah. Well, Nelson, I think that brings us to the big question. Which is, did Vision Quest hold up?
More than I would have thought. I loved it. Thought that was great.
I agree. Actually, I really enjoyed it. Way more than I thought I was going to. Like, I really thought I was in for just some 80s idiocy. And this is like a thinker.
Right?
In a way that, you know, they had actual real emotion and character depth and interesting. I mean, there's a few silly parts, but...
Oh, for sure.
It was actually quite good. I was very surprised.
Most of it, like, the silly parts always got sort of redeemed by something else, which made me think, like, well, they know kind of what they're doing. Like, again, like, the kid who is, you know, playing at being Native American, that to me was the best sort of twist, because it's like, oh, there's this trope we've seen a million times. Oh, you're going on a vision quest. Yeah, the whole theme of the movie is this kid stating it, and then he's full of shit. Is great.
The way in which it undercuts its own validity is really interesting.
Yeah, and it does that at a lot of turns. So, you know, most, I think that comes from, you know, I would say confidence. I think most movies don't have the confidence to be like, you know, yeah, he's kind of a young, dumb jock, and this story doesn't really mean a whole lot, but we'll make it seem like it means a lot, which is great. I love it when movies take nothing and make it everything successfully. So
absolutely,
there you go,
Nelson. That will bring us to the discussion of what our next episode will be, which is our 50th episode.
Episode 50, people.
We've been going strong for 4 years now.
4 years. It just happens to land on our fourth anniversary. This is going to be epic.
Yes. So we are not going to tell you what we're going to do for episode 50, but we can tease that it will be four parts. Four parts long.
Can you dig it, people? A four part.
There's a little hint. And if you have any feeling like you might know what we're doing with that one hint, a four part episode, let's see if you can guess. Why don't you send us your guesses to holduppodcast@gmail.com. And maybe we'll do a little something special for anyone that gets it right.
I even have a good thing we can give you if you get it right. I'm not going to tell you what it is,
though. Oh, double mystery. Excellent. But also, if you'd like to send us an email in general, just have any questions or comments or ideas for future episodes, you can email us at holduppodcast@gmail.com. Or you can visit us at holduppodcast.com. There you'll find links to everything. Our Instagram page, our Facebook page, our Twitter page, the whole works. Holduppodcast.com. And until next time,
nobody move, nobody gets hurt.